This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the Fans NBA Team Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Reich. I'm joined by Adam Murray. How are you? Having a good Friday, a happy Friday, a bad Friday? What kind of Friday are you having
today? Well, we made it through the season again.
Yeah, we are literally on the eve of the playoffs. We are almost live. You know, the listeners aren't always showing behind the scenes, but you'll never believe this, but we actually do tape our, like, record our shows, like, well in advance of when they're released. You know, that might shock some of the Place to Be Nation listeners, and for those that are listening, thank you for joining us. But we're actually, like, very, very close to, like, our actual publication this time, as we're, like, literally right on the, like, on the tip of the iceberg that is the NBA playoffs, which can be slow as an iceberg sometimes.
Yep, so here we go. So what seed did Charlotte make?
Oh, you're really going to just troll me like that. But the one thing you got right in the offseason versus, like, the many, many things that we both got wrong, you're going to just harp on the one thing you got right about the Hornets.
It's like baseball. If I could just carry a, you know, a 30% average, I'm golden.
With this playoffs versus 2016, I don't know if you have, like, the most vivid memory of how you felt about 2016 playoffs. I know that last year we decided to split it with the East and the West. You were traveling, so I did the East with Todd Weber, and I think I did the West with Norman Rockwell and Ryan Arena. Now it's you and me here. We're gonna do both conferences, all eight matchups. So it's not going to be a mega podcast episode this time. We're just going to try to jam it in as quickly as we can. But give me an idea of how you feel about the playoffs this year versus last year. Like, where's the narrative? How has things changed? Is there anything, any kind of wrinkle that you see in the storylines that you're kind of keeping an eye on?
Well, this year's narrative is I'm actually paying attention as opposed to being 10 hours away where they don't speak English, the language is not written in English, and nobody cares about basketball. So, now the narrative this year is just Cleveland. What's up with Cleveland? You know, are they going to be okay? Why are they a two seed? And, you know, is Tyronn Lue a good coach? Can we say he's
Well, we know the answer to that question.
You know, and so that's just the narrative. It's just, well, what happened to, why is Cleveland not a number one seed? And it's, you know, it's probably one of those, you probably looked at the schedule, said we're better off being a two, and
yeah. There's a variety of other storylines, some that kind of have some kinship to last year's that we're going to hit on as we go to these eight matchups. But let's just go ahead and get rolling because we got a lot of matchups to get to. Let's just start right off the top. The first game that's going to be airing on ABC on Saturday is going to be in the Eastern Conference. We're going to start with all the East matchups first to just try to keep it congruent here. We're going to start with the Cavs and the Indiana Pacers, the aforementioned Cleveland Cavaliers. Before we get into the actual matchup between Cleveland and Indiana, how's your take right now on Cleveland? I mean, is there a lot of worry? They literally punted on the regular season down the stretch, cost them that one seed, like you said. So now they're at the two seed matching up with a seven seed. But how did you feel about Cleveland down the stretch?
Cleveland was just, why is LeBron playing 40 minutes a game if they're still phoning it in? And are they just really that bad? And then you break it down, it's like, wow, they, you know, J.R. Smith just looks completely lost since he's come back.
Mm-hmm.
And their bench is just a bunch of LeBron's old friends who can't play defense and are just one-dimensional.
They started out hot. You know, they had that big win on Christmas Day against the Warriors. Clearly had the best record in the East for a very long time. Had a bad January, bounced back a tad. The Kevin Love injury obviously hurt them. But even though he came back, they were still struggling and had a really bad final stretch to the regular season. I would say March was probably their worst month. LeBron, like you were saying, clocked in tons of minutes, even though they did DNP rest a lot of their guys, including Kyrie Irving. The J.R. Smith injury, like you were mentioning, was a big deal. I think Tristan Thompson, who was like the NBA Iron Man at that point, also was set, you know, which was very surprising. I thought he wanted to keep that active game streak going, but that didn't happen. Small pickups like Darren Williams, Derrick Williams. Then they dumped DeAndre Liggins and Larry Sanders. They bring in Dante Jones, who was on last year's championship roster, and then a rebounder, Eddie Tavares. Outside of that, pretty much the same crew. I also have to mention Kyle Korver, who they got in January. But I mean, what's the difference here between like the Cleveland team that we saw celebrating and LeBron winning the championship in Golden State and this team? Like, what's the difference?
The difference with this team is that they're a year older now. They're a year older. The injuries are, you know, we're slowed them down a little bit this season. Everything last year they just steamrolled through everything. If you remember the playoffs.
Yeah, the only team that's older than them is the Clippers.
Yeah, the first round, all they did was hit, like, they hit the most threes, and the second round, all they did was just dunk on whoever, and it was just,
they drained threes on the Hawks, and then they just destroyed the Raptors at the rim in the conference finals, yeah.
Yeah, so this year, it's, I don't want to say there's heightened competition in the East, because they're really, all the teams sort of have their own fatal flaws. It's just, you know, they've hit autopilot. Like, you know, we know we're going to make it. It was sort of like how, you know, it's the old Doc Rivers, you know, well, let's just phone it in the last few weeks and conserve our energy for the playoffs. Who cares if we're on the road or we're at home? We know we're good enough. And, you know, we're going to hit shots then when it matters. What does it matter, you know, spending all our energy against Orlando and, you know, Indiana?
Yeah, you don't want to rope-a-dope for too long. You know, there's always that whole, the mythical switch, like flipping the switch. But, you know, if there's any team that's obviously capable of that, it's a LeBron-led team because he's such a fantastic playoff performer. You'd have to be dumb to bet against LeBron James in the Eastern Conference playoffs at this point, which kind of, like, gives away pretty much any prediction that we're going to have for Eastern Conference playoffs stand, you know, matchups going forward. But, that, you know, that's just the truth. You know, LeBron is, he's been this, with six straight finals, he's looking for his seventh, I believe, right?
Yep.
And so, go ahead.
And they're going against the mighty powerhouse of meh.
A familiar opponent for LeBron James. He's played against Paul George and the Pacers three different times, all three times with the Miami Heat, though, obviously different incarnation. The Pacers were obviously different, too. They were even much different than they were last year when they were eliminated by the Toronto Raptors in seven games. Obviously, Paul George, even though he had a lot of that trade whirlwind going on at the trade deadline, did not get moved. Clearly unhappy with the direction of the Pacers. They still made the playoffs here at 42-40. Jeff Teague kind of started out a little slow, but he really got going. Miles Turner had a really good second year. Thaddeus Young was a good acquisition for them, but they got so desperate in their bench that they had to pick up Lance Stephenson, and he turned out to like be one of the only bright spots on the bench. So, you know, they shoot the ball well, but they just don't take a lot of threes. They're a terrible rebounding team. But you do have Paul George, who plays the 3/4 spot right there with LeBron. You know, they've been matched up one-on-one before in previous playoff matchups. So what kind of advantages can you see Indiana taking against Cleveland?
I don't see any, because Indiana is just, you know, what matchup do they have? Who, you know, their bench maybe if it gets down.
Kyrie Irving has always given Jeff Teague trouble, always. That one's a no. C.J. Miles, who actually was a former Cavalier himself, in during their really bad years. I feel like C.J. Miles might be more effective at the two versus like Monte Ellis or somebody like that.
Ellis has just fallen out of the lineup and just fallen off the face of the earth. It looks like
he's playing a little bit more down the stretch. He played. I mean, they had that really good overtime game. The Cavs, by the way, won this game, won three out of the four games. The only game they lost, LeBron sat, and that was early in the season. They did have that really good game about 2 weeks ago that went to double overtime, where the Indiana had every chance to win it and blew it. And then the Cavaliers took it in double overtime. George and LeBron both had like crazy numbers. And then the Pacers rattle off five wins in a row to really save their season after that loss. So, you know, a little bit of momentum going in here for the Pacers, but I just, you know, Nate McMillan coaching the team in place of Frank Vogel, it kind of feels like the same team, though.
It is the same team. They just, you know, here's the assistant coach. Well, I'm not going to change anything. Well, let's bring in Thaddeus Young, who didn't, you know, was decent, but not a superstar. Jeff Teague, was he really an upgrade over George Hill? Yeah, he's better, but, and this is why, you know, Paul George was frustrated. He's like, well, the best we could be is a 42-40 team, and you know, not many people are like, well, they should have been a 5 seed. Everyone's like, nah, this is about where they kind of were. This is who they are, and, you know, they're lucky to have made the playoffs. And
the only thing for me to really watch when it comes to upset alert is that the Cavs have been really bad defensively. If you look at their numbers, you know, block, they don't get blocks, they don't get steals, 22nd in efficiency on defense, 20th in points allowed. Just not very good numbers there. Middle of the pack in rebounding. That has a lot to do with the fact that Love and Tristan Thompson didn't play together all the time because of Love's injury. Now, when Love and Tristan Thompson are both getting double-doubles, that's a different story. That's when the Cavaliers start to kind of hog up the paint, and it's really, really hard to beat them. But when they're not rebounding the ball well, they can be had because defensively they give up a lot of shots. They like to play – they don't play super fast, but they'd love to chuck up threes. They were second in the league in three-pointers made. But here's the thing. The Indiana is a good shooting team, literally in all three levels. They can shoot threes, they can shoot from the field, and they can make free throws. So, I mean, Paul George is like a 92% free throw shooter, so fouling him is not going to do you much good.
But the problem, what Indiana really needs is just sort of a fountain of youth rejuvenation from Al Jefferson.
Yeah, well, that's what Turner's supposed to be, but here's the problem. Who's backing up Turner? You got Lavoy Allen, you've got, you know, Ian Mahimi left in free agency to the for the Washington Wizards, and then who else is behind Allen? You got Glenn Robinson III, who's got a small injury, Rakeem Christmas, you know, Kevin Serafin. I mean, like, they don't really have much. You know, if you get Miles Turner in foul trouble, which has been his bugaboo this year, I mean, they're going to have a lot of trouble handling Thompson and Love. That's the matchup to me to watch.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, what's going to happen is just what happens if the Cavaliers just go big.
Yeah,
and you know, Thompson, Love, and LeBron on the court. Well, where do you move? Who does Paul George guard? And you know, you're gonna put Thaddeus Young on Kevin Love, and it's not really a good matchup for him.
Some defensive wrinkles that obviously Cleveland has to work out too. If the Pacers go small, the irony here is that, you know, Larry Bird has been pushing, you know, to try to go a little more up-tempo to kind of stay with the times of pace and space with these teams. But they still have kind of been resistant to it. Their pace is still, like, pretty low, and they don't seem like an offensively driven team. But I think for them to be even, like, a challenge for Cleveland, they have to play faster. I don't think slowing down is going to really help you against Cleveland because they're just going to kill you with three-pointers all night long. What do you see here for, like, a result, like a prediction here in terms of games? I know a lot of people like to do, well, of course this is going to go six, or of course this is going to go seven.
Four.
And it's like, you know, I mean, it's hard to kind of round things out, but give me just an idea there.
Just straight four.
You don't see the Pacers taking even one at Indiana?
No.
Okay. I have the Pacers in five. I think Paul George will have one really good game at home that'll save them, and then they'll get eliminated in Cleveland in game five. Let's move on to the next one that's going to be played. That'll be, I believe, on ESPN, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks going to the Toronto Raptors, who will be hosting them. The Raptors, this will be their fourth consecutive playoff appearance. Now, infamously, they've lost game one in each of their opening round, you know, series in the playoffs. Now, they lost the first two, but they climbed out of it against the aforementioned Pacers and won in seven games. Now they play the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, I mean, different Bucks team also from the last one that made the playoffs in 2015. What do you see here with this matchup, just glancing at it?
Well, this was, we can't believe, I thought Milwaukee was supposed to be a complete mess this year, and they somehow turned it around and had a, you know, got hot at the end, and Toronto started off extremely hot and sort of cooled off at the end, and the Serge Ibaka trade, I don't know, the jury's kind of...
It semi-saved them, to be honest, you know, because their defense got much better when Ibaka came in. They were able to go too big with Ibaka and Valanciunas, which turned out to work a little bit better for them. Offensively, they did take a hit. You know, Terrence Ross was a very good part of the, you know,
decent. He was their sixth man.
What was it called? Like the Lowry Plus lineup, where they had like two six men that would basically be starter level guys, Ross and Patrick Patterson, and they would start the second quarter games with DeRozan sitting with Lowry as the main ball handler, and they would just kill teams to start the second quarter, which would give Toronto a lot of advantages over inferior teams. I really feel like, and this is the first time I felt like this in the last four playoff appearances for Toronto, I feel like Toronto is clearly the superior team this time. I didn't feel that way when they played Brooklyn because Brooklyn was so experienced. I didn't feel that way when they played Washington because I felt like they were on an even keel and Lowry was coming back from an injury. And with the Pacers, even though the Raptors were a two seed, Paul George I knew was going to give them a lot of matchup trouble, and the Pacers had a lot of experience at the time. With the Bucks, I feel like this is fresh meat for them to eat on.
Well, this is veterans versus, you know, the young guys. The, yeah. you know, who outside of, was it Jason Terry, how many of those Milwaukee Bucks, you know, Dalia Dova.
It's funny because if you look at experience, you know, the Bucks are actually ranked higher. But if you look at, like, the number of playoff games that have been played for these teams, like especially Ibaka with the Thunder, you know, Corey Joseph previously with the Spurs, Damari Carroll with the Atlanta Hawks before that, and I think the Grizzlies even before that one. Like, they've all clocked in some pretty major minutes. Whereas, you know, I don't think Chris Middleton has had – I mean, they had that one stretch in 2015 when they lost to the Bulls in the first round, but not a lot of playing time. This is Greg Monroe's first playoff appearance in his career.
Yep, and like I said, you know, Dalia Dova just had, you know, he had that darling run last year where he was, you know, just running around in circles. But outside of him, you know, the main core characters are just like, oh, we don't, you know, we're excited to be here. Whereas the Raptors are like, yeah, it's business.
Who guards DeMar DeRozan? I you would think Chris Middleton, but if you have to shadow him, who do you use? Tony Snell, maybe Malcolm Brogdon with that big body, really good rookie for them at point guard. What do you do?
Well, let's just take a little pause right here and say what a great trade of Tony Snell for Carter Williams.
Well, we might see Carter Williams sneak in the playoffs too, but that's
yeah. But I'm saying for Milwaukee, Snell has just he fit right in and just you know became a valuable member to that team.
Yeah, it's a weird Jason Kidd's weird because that's why I had to ask who's going to get matched up because it's at the whim, it's kind of at the whim of what Kidd wants to do, and he's always tinkering with the lineup. Like, how many starts has Thon Maker gotten? He's got like 30 starts on him. You know, he started Michael Beasley at shooting guard for a little while Middleton was out with that torn hamstring. You know, then the moment then this was just because of injury that they had to kind of change everything. Chris Middleton comes back from the hamstring injury, and literally the next game or that very game, Jabari Parker, who was one of their like other big stars yet next to the guy we haven't even mentioned yet, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Parker tore his ACL. So that kind of changed the makeup of the team. They surged when Middleton came back, and then they were able to secure a playoff spot. But I worry there about who's going to be able to guard DeRozan and Middleton winds up in foul trouble. They have similar games, Middleton and DeRozan. And, you know, they're both mid-range pull-up guys, but DeRozan's so much better, and he draws so many fouls, you know, with the pump fakes and stuff. You know, but here's the thing with Giannis. Like, Toronto's got a lot of athletes and a lot of bodies that they can throw at him. Maybe Ibaka can shadow him sometimes. But what can you do against Giannis? Because Kidd, like I said, with the lineups, he's always messing with it. You can play Giannis literally from 1 to 4. Like, what do you think he's going to do with Giannis?
It's just going to be we need to ride him as much as we possibly can. I don't think, you know, it's going to be one of those. It has to be one of those clear as day. All right, he's our guy. On the other side, Toronto's like, well, we need to stop him. And, you know, it's not going to be, well, we need to, you know, let's do a sneak attack and have Chris Middleton be the guy. No, Giannis has to get hot, and he has to get hot early.
Yeah, and you got Malcolm Brogdon there if you want to have to do the traditional point stuff. Matthew Dellavedova can be a guy that you can throw on to Kyle Lowry, try to get under his skin a little bit. He's proven to be a surprise playoff performer, a guy that sometimes in the playoffs, if you take him for granted, he'll surprise you, meaning Dellavedova. Brogdon had a good rookie year, but guess what, Adam? He's a rookie. I mean, he's going to make mistakes in a playoff game. It's going to happen. But the Raptors, like I was alluding to, they're very young too. You know, Lucas Nogueira, Pascal Siakam was getting a lot of early starts because of the fact that they were relying on Jared Sullinger. When Sullinger flopped, they made the move to get Ibaka. What's the difference between before they got Ibaka, when they had Terrence Ross, and now that they have Ibaka? Minus Ross, and also with PJ Tucker, who they might throw on Giannis too.
It's just the pacing is now slowed down, and it's more of a, you know, it's a half court game now more than ever with Ibaka as opposed to Ross coming in, and you know even Tucker the second unit is completely different.
Yeah, he's a little dirty. Like he'll get dirty on you know defensively on somebody. You know Patterson. Has become, would you say, a good NBA offensive player? Is that fair to say at this point in his career?
He is, I don't mean this with any disrespect, but he is just the average NBA player.
Then you got Powell, who's like a wide-bodied guard, you know, like, and then Corey Joseph is kind of a decent, like, throw-in the Bucks try to throw Dellavedova on the court, you know, if you want to try to keep Lowry off of him so he doesn't, because Dellavedova's got a reputation for being physical. you know, trying to kind of get like a Patrick Beverley type of reputation. And you don't want Lowry to get hurt. He just came back from a wrist injury. So you wonder kind of how Dwayne Casey's going to match that up. I'm not sure if Casey's too cunning adjustment-wise. I know he did a really good one with Bismack Biyombo last year, but that was sort of out of necessity because Valanciunas got hurt. I can't give that much credit to Casey last year. But Kidd, he'll throw spaghetti at the wall. That's just his style. I don't know if that means he's a bad coach or he's just constantly, you know, second-guessing himself. The last time Kidd and Casey coached against each other was Brooklyn and Toronto in 2014. Brooklyn got in 7 games. Do you think the Milwaukee will have any kind of luck in that case against Toronto?
No, they'll get a game, you know, most likely the first game, as you mentioned that Toronto always loses the first one. And, you know, it should be an easy 5 for them once they figure out.
I don't even think it'll be that close. I think Toronto's going to win big in the first 2 in Toronto, and they're going to be so confident that it's just going to roll over, and I think they're going to actually sweep the Bucks. That's going to be – I guess – is that a hot take?
Fair enough.
I mean, if Parker was healthy – I know it's a hypothetical, which you're a big fan of. But if Parker was healthy, how effective would the Bucks be?
I don't know because – that would require knowing anything about this team. And like you mentioned, there's so many lineup changes, so many players who don't have positions. And
yeah, they have a lot of athleticism and a lot of guys that just kind of switch constantly. You know, that does give them an advantage where if they do that, like, because the bee's knees now in the NBA, it seems like, is that small pick and roll. You know, it used to be traditional just do P&R with like a big and a point guard now or a role man like a power forward. Now they're doing it with guards. You know, just to kind of throw the scent off. But switching is really a good resolution to like a guard pick and roll. And Milwaukee can switch that because they got a lot of athletes. You got Thon Maker, you got Mirza Teletovic, who's a good shooter. John Henson can block shots. You know, a little bit of length. Even Rashad Vaughn got some starts.
Oh, we're not going to see Thon Maker now that the playoffs are here. He's just going to be back to the end of the end of the end of the bench.
Because the problem is if you put Maker out there, he would probably wind up being stuck having to guard DeRozan, and that's a terrible matchup. You know,
why would you put Thon Maker on DeRozan?
Well, if he's out on the court, then Toronto's going to see that immediately, and they're going to put.
Oh, they're just going to be he'll be on the court for 3 minutes, and they're going to be down by 7, and it's going to be like, and yeah, you can't afford to do that, and give him his honorary start, and try to get into the your acclimation and practice and training via the first 5 minutes where nobody really cares.
Is this the last we'll see of Jason Terry? Or have we already seen the last of Jason Terry? You know, the kid will play him. He will. You know, he's a good 3-point shooter still.
Of course we'll see him. It's just, you know, he's on the Vince Carter, Richard Jefferson, aren't they 50 years old?
Yeah. Like, the funny thing with the Bucks is that they're, you know, I always worry when your raw data says one thing and then the efficiency says something different. Like, points per game, they're 20th, but they're 13th in efficiency, which means they're better than you think, but they don't show it all the time. And then they're 10th in points allowed, but it's because they play a slow pace and their defensive efficiency is worse. So, like, the Bucks are just kind of wild because they had to change so many things on the fly after the Parker injury and reinserting Middleton. But I still like the Raptors big here. I think that they're going to move on. Let's move on to the Wizards and the Hawks. That's going to be the 4-5 matchup. You know, it seems like these are perennial playoff teams, but actually the Wizards missed the playoffs last year. That was sort of the motivation behind changing the coaching, the head coaching position from Randy Whitman to Scott Brooks. Very different in terms of their offense. Their offense really started to fly a little bit more under Brooks. Defensively, the Wizards have struggled, but John Wall and Bradley Beal have had career years. They play the most minutes among their starters than any other team in the league, like by a mile. I think that starting five, unless you want to correct me while I'm saying it, is Wall, Beal, Otto Porter, Markieff Morris, and who's the center? The Polish Gortat. So that's kind of their starting lineup.
And no, they did have the most minutes, but this team benefited the most. Even more so than Toronto from the trade deadline.
You're talking about the Bojan Bogdanovic pickup from the Brooklyn Nets.
And Brandon Jennings
Well, he gives them a better option than Trey Burke, but Jennings, it seems like, has lost that backup spot to Trey Burke. It seemed like in the last game of the tankathon, they Burke played most of the minutes at point guard. You know, the one thing that they do throw out there in their lineups, which is kind of interesting, but it's also very systematic in that Brooks is kind of like religious to it, is that he will sit Gortat, who's older. He's the oldest player, I think, on the team. And they will move Markieff Morris to center, and they will throw in Kelly Oubre at the four spot as a stretch four because he's got some wingspan on him. He can play some defense. And then you have Otto Porter as the oversized small forward, and you can kind of throw a lot of shooting out there because Otto Porter has turned into a really, really good shooter in his, I believe, his fourth year in the league, or maybe his third, I believe. And so you got more shooting there, but offensively, really, really good. Defensively, I mean, just bad. 22nd in points allowed, 23rd in rebounding, 24th in blocks, 20th in defensive efficiency. They just struggle, but offensively, just everything looks good, especially when you have Wall, who's not only just a good guard, he's really fast. That's his reputation. He's just a great point guard, period.
Yep, and this is sort of the interesting matchup of the East because you have the offense of Washington, you know, the small ball offense going against the big ball defense of Atlanta.
Yeah, defense is the name of the game for Atlanta most of the time, even when they were in their previous incarnation when they had Paul Millsap, who's still there, Jeff Teague, Kyle Korver, Damari Carroll, and did I say Al Horford already?
No.
In Al Horford. But now, obviously, a different kind of a new day, new team. You got Millsap still there, even though he had some trade talks, but he stayed. Dennis Schroeder, who's kind of a ball-stopping point guard. Is that a good way of putting it? A little Rajon Rondo-ish?
Yeah.
And, you know, Dwight Howard was another big acquisition. Kent Bazemore is getting a lot more play. The one thing that's interesting about Atlanta, even though offensively they're 28th in efficiency, which is just like, I mean, that's a frightening number, Adam. They have a lot of wings and they have a lot of forwards that they can flex into their lineup.
Well, they have a lot of, you know, addition by subtraction by getting rid of Korver and his, you know, it was, oh, they're going to be selling now because they got rid of this. They're tearing apart the team. And it's just who thought that, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. would be.
Well, look at Mike Dunleavy. Inspired play from a guy that they thought was done. The Cavaliers literally gave up on him.
But when he wanted to be cut, he wanted to be released so he could go to a playoff team, and then all of a sudden, wow, he's playing.
You know, Cephalosha's like the defensive wing that you could throw out there. Tim Hardaway Jr., who you mentioned. I mean, he's played his way into basically a really nice contract in the summer. Torian Prince has gotten a little bit more play. The real problem here is going to be the guard spot if Dennis Schroeder struggles against John Wall, and because the Hawks are at their best when they're sharing. You know, that's how it's always been with them under Coach Bud, you know, Mike Budenholzer, that when they're moving the ball, when it's crisp and they're ninth in assists for the season, that's when they're most effective because they don't really have a true go-to guy after Millsap. You know, Dwight Howard's not that player anymore. It's kind of stunning that they're eighth in assists, even though they have Schroeder at point guard and Dwight Howard at center. That just shows how well coached the team is. The problem, though, is that at the guard spot, if Dennis Schroeder is not really working, if he's turning the ball over too much, which has been one of his propensities, if you pull him, I mean, the options are just not very good. There's Malcolm Delaney, Jose Calderon. There's really not much you can do there.
Well, you have the problem not only Schroeder, you have to put Hardaway on Bradley Beal. And if Bradley Beal hits a couple quick threes, and, you know, Bazemore is going to have to earn his lofty contract here, you know, guarding Otto Porter Jr. and keep him at bay. But, yeah, it's going to be the main matchup is Bradley Beal. Yeah, and Hardaway.
Here's where Budenholzer might be able to get, you know, a little bit of trickery, like because I've talked about how many forwards they can kind of flex into the rotation, depending on whether it be starting, because they'll be willing to do that. They'll throw a different starter in there, maybe put Dunleavy on the starting spot if they want to go small. Whereas with the Wizards, they don't really have a lot of flexibility, like we were mentioning. They're both teams' bench. I mean, I think Atlanta's bench, I would say, is decent. I don't have bench production numbers in front of me right now, but I would say Atlanta is probably like in the upper half. The Wizards are definitely in the bottom half. They've been one of the worst benches in the league all year.
Bogdanovich.
That was a good addition for them, but you know, even Trey Burke has not really shown anything as the backup point guard now. the last time they played each other in the playoffs, it was, you know, obviously a different story, but that was because Wall broke his hand or broke his wrist in game one, and without Wall, they were really just they didn't have much of a good chance, and they still were competitive against the Hawks. So, you know, are the Wizards more than capable here? Absolutely. I would actually favor them here to win it, you know, but what would be your pick here for Washington and Atlanta?
Wizards in six.
You'd say six games?
I'd say six. I'd say, yeah, Atlanta, maybe they split the first two homes then. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, Washington is a completely, they are a different team on the road.
That's true. Their home court has really been tremendous. Like, that's what kind of kick-started their run after the new year, when they went from basically being a losing team, seeming hopeless, to, like, being right there in the thick of it at the top of the East race. I've got the Wizards winning in, I want to say, five. I don't think the Wizards are going to drop a game at home, you know, and that's going to be the key. If they take one out of Atlanta, that'll be it.
Okay.
You know, whether that be in game four or three or five, like it's or six, it's going to happen eventually where the Wizards are going to take one from Atlanta, and that'll be the end. So let's go ahead and finish that last one with the last game that's going to be airing this weekend from the Eastern Conference playoffs. And that's going to be unbelievably in the 1-8 matchup, the Boston Celtics, your Boston Celtics, versus Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo, and that big three in Chicago for the Bulls.
So,
you call them a big three?
So Chicago is the one seed here because, you know, we're taping this so early and, you know, Wade revitalized the franchise and Rondo has been all-star level and, you know, Hoiberg's coach of the year, right?
Well, let me ask you this with Wade. He's coming back from that elbow fracture. Do you think even at like 80%, do you think what's the difference between Dwayne Wade versus what you saw even against even when they played – he played in Miami last year when they beat the Charlotte Hornets and then they lost in seven to the Raptors. Like, Wade was still playing some inspired basketball. What's been the difference this year outside of just being 1 year older?
It's just the dysfunction of Chicago.
Okay.
That team is just a complete mess, and despite all odds, they did manage to make the playoffs. They tried desperately to bench Rondo. Couldn't.
They tried.
Everybody else got injured or sucked so bad.
Well, Jerry and Grant, I mean, if that's your next guy up, it's like, good Lord. And, I mean, Michael Carter-Williams has gotten to a point where he's been relegated to basically, like, what, like an off-ball two? Like, is that basically what he is now?
Yeah, and then they trade for Cameron Payne just to send him down to the D-League again.
Yeah, they literally gave away an expiring Taj Gibson, which they still could have used in a playoff run, and Doug McDermott, who is a perfectly innocent contract, you know?
Yeah, and the issue I don't like here is Chicago's a very good rebounding team. Boston does not know the definition of rebounding. When Avery Bradley's your leading rebounder for most of the season, it's like, that's not good.
That's one of the key team stats that's been thrown out there in the upset special that would be Chicago over Boston. I mean, like an 8 beating a 1, it's not like a 16 beating a 1 in the NCAA. It's not like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Like, it's happened. Like, 8 seeds have beaten 1 seed. So, like, the idea that it would happen is not exactly out of the realm of possibility. You know, this is a real thing. But, yes, Chicago is third in the league in rebounding. Boston is 27th. So when Brad said that joke about, well, there must be like three other teams that weren't in the league, I think one of them would include the Dallas Mavericks because they were worse than the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, and, you know, Boston has a very good defensive backcourt. And the problem is just nobody's going to stop Jimmy Butler at any time.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. They're one of the top teams in three-point field goal percentage defense. But the thing is, Chicago doesn't take threes anyway. You know, I know Fred Hoiberg had a reputation at Iowa State for being like a three-ball guy, likes to hoist it up. But that's not what Chicago does. Even though they made changes in the offseason, like wholesale changes with moving Rose, moving Joakim Noah, bringing in Wade, bringing in Rondo, it's kind of the same style. They play slow. Their offense is bad. Defense is sort of their calling card. You know, the key difference I felt like with Chicago was that when Dwayne Wade went out with the elbow injury, They got a lot better play out of guys like Paul Zipser, Nikola Mirotic, Robin Lopez played pretty inspired at the center spot, even though he might be a mismatch for some of these Celtic lineups that Brad Stevens is going to throw at him if they flex guys. But I felt like they got a lot better play out of their younger rotation when Wade got out. Now that Wade's back in, you kind of wonder if the Bulls are kind of going to turtle up here if the Celtics really get on a roll.
Well, there's that, and at the same time, the Celtics haven't won anything and still haven't gotten out of the first round in the past 3 years. So
are you believing in that kind of like that? Well, Toronto Raptors had it last year with that bugaboo of like, can you get out of the first round? Can you win a series? Can you pop the cherry, for lack of a better term?
Oh, it's going to be there. And, you know, I'm a little more cautious than, you know, other hometown fans. But it's like, oh, yeah, my team's missing. No, the Celtics really aren't, you know. Marcus Smart can just disappear and just have a dumb game every once in a while. And, you know, think back to the beginning of the season where Chicago won by just taking threes.
Their rim protection is still a major issue. I mean, that was a big issue in the offseason. People thought it was going to be solved with Horford. Horford's numbers are solid, even though he missed some time with injury.
Well,
but
Horford just shoots threes now, and he's become a passing center.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of like a roaming center. I know he's got 1.3 blocks per game, which is good. But if you look at the assist numbers, which is at 5, it's kind of like Mason Plumlee-ish, where it's like he's there as a presence in the middle because he's a, you know, pretty strong center, but he's not exactly like a world beater down there. He's not Rudy Gobert, you know what I'm saying? So you got, but tell me something nice about your Celtics. I know you're always down on them, but give me something nice about them. The points, the assists, Isaiah Thomas being just an absolute destroyer in the fourth quarter.
Well, that's the
games.
Thing. If the fourth quarter comes, it's just going to be, well, let's just give Isaiah the ball and he'll score 15 points.
But it's effective. It's not like it's not like Russell Westbrook-ish, where even though Westbrook is great in the clutch, you know, it does feel like it kind of like it becomes very – it's a very ball-stopper type of style, whereas with Isaiah, he can still get people involved even while he's scoring.
Yep, and that's just basically – you know, they had a – you know, just watching the last week where they got beaten down by Cleveland and then Atlanta and barely beat, you know, teams like Orlando and, you know, Brooklyn kept it close. It was just when I was like, yeah, this team – you know, they're a flawed team who can't rebound, and they just have to be very hot shooting.
Yeah, I think they can carry that, though. If it comes down to three-point shooting, the Celtics are going to have this in a walk. I see this one going about 6 games. I think that Wade's experience – and then obviously the one that we didn't mention here is Jimmy Butler. I mean, Jimmy Butler will be a problem. He's always a problem for some of these small ball lineups. What do you see here?
Oh, it'll be 6, probably. I could even see 7 easily.
Who do they match with Jimmy Butler? I know the obvious one is the Marquette teammate, the former Marquette teammate,
Jay
Crowder. It would
have to be Jay Crowder. That's it. That's it, because you have to keep Marcus.
Well, you don't want to get Marcus Smart in foul trouble because you want him down the stretch to make plays.
Yeah, but you have to keep him on Wade just in case.
Oh, that's going to be sweet. Because you know, Wade's so smart, he's so wily, but Marcus just has a way of getting under your skin. You know, that'll be, you know, especially with the flops, which he has a reputation for. That'll be an interesting matchup if they really go that way. But if they throw that wrinkle out there with Mirotic at the 4, you know, I mean, you don't want to throw Horford at the 4. That's a little too big. That means you're going to be playing Amir Johnson or Kelly Olynyk, and I don't know about that.
A lot of Jonas Jerebko.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea, you know. And then obviously Terry Rozier versus Jerian Grant, that's kind of a wash. Is that true? You know, there's some things where Chicago's kind of got him matched up okay, you know, but Isaiah there versus the point guard, that's a nightmare. That's going to be a nightmare scenario for Chicago. Let's go ahead and just move on to the Western Conference. The first game that we're going to be seeing on Saturday is going to be the Memphis Grizzlies, who have the 7 seed versus the 2 seeded 62 win, I believe, San Antonio Spurs, something around 60. That's what they always get, huh?
4 games.
No, we gotta go farther than this. I mean, we can't just stop there.
What's to really say? Good for Memphis for making it. Despite, you know,
and
they
give him a golf clap for finally staying healthy all the way to the end of the season, and then Tony Allen gets a calf strain.
Tony Allen gets a calf strain. Chandler Parsons was injured, and you know, useless for the year. And, you know, okay, Mike Conley, hey, you know, good for you. You know, you've sort of earned that max contract and you're playing well. And Gasol's healthy and playing well. And,
well,
know,
I don't know
Randolph.
If Gasol's healthy, though. He's coming back late, but it was scheduled. He was scheduled that way coming off of an injury. So I hope he's 100%.
Well, he should be healthy.
Yeah. This is kind of Mike Conley's team, though, right? This is very different from – I mean, we can't count the 2016 one that got swept by the Spurs when the Spurs were 67-15. That's just – we can't. That was a MASH unit. They had no Conley. Gasol broke his foot. Randolph was kind of in and out. It was just not the same team.
Had nobody.
Let's flash to the 2015 one under Yorger. It is a little bit different from that.
This is the new Fizdale team with – you know, a little, I don't want to say slightly faster play, slightly different style.
Yeah, they're 28th in pace, which is better than 30th.
I mean, they're on their way up.
Their three-point shooting has gone up. A lot of credit there would probably go to Troy Daniels, the signing that they had in the offseason, kind of a gunner there. Conley takes more threes since he's sort of running the team now. He, like, literally from the point, he's running the team. He's not reverting back to Gasol or Randolph doing that big boy grit and grind stuff anymore. I mean, kind of grit and grindish, but not like it was.
No, they change it up now as opposed to, all right, tip off. Let's start the grit and grind. Let's start the ground and pound, and we're not going to give up for 48 minutes. Now it's like, okay, let's shoot some threes now. Let's bring in some guards and do some stuff, which, you know, is a welcome change of pace. However, it's just, you know, I don't want to be like up four game sweep, but, you know, San Antonio is just continuing to be on all cylinders. And
yeah, I mean, it's a well-oiled machine. You know, that's been the compliment for them, even when Duncan was sort of struggling, you know, down the stretch of last season when they went into the playoffs. You know, they got the Grizzlies last year, but like I said, that was kind of like a glorified tune-up. You know, Kawhi Leonard, MVP candidate kind of year. LaMarcus Aldridge struggled early, but he kind of came around late. Pau Gasol comes off the bench. They start Dwayne Dedmon. A little bit more athleticism now with guys like Jonathan Simmons, DeJounte Murray, who's sort of a backup point guard. Patty Mills is pretty effective. Tony Parker's had probably his worst season of his career. Is that true to say?
Yeah, he's
46% shooter,
fast.
10 points, less than 5 assists. Pretty bad, but he's – you know, he's a guy that can sort of kind of run off of that, you know, that curl stuff, that curl action. And, you know, if he gets a little bit open off of mid-range, he's going to take some shots. You know, he's just not as good as he used to be. That's why Patty Mills gets way more minutes than he used to.
And the problem is, you know, how would one take on San Antonio? Well, you sort of run them around and run them to the ground. But that's not going to happen with Memphis. So, you know, it's a horrible matchup for Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, like, no Tony Allen now to guard Kawhi Leonard. Who you put on him? James Ennis? Vince Carter? Like, you're going to have a lot of trouble there. You know, you can't put Conley on him. You know, they might be able to throw some bigger lineups at him, like, because Brandon Wright has played more down the stretch. But
Jermichael Green, you know,
starts.
It's just, well, there's nobody you could put on him now that Tony Allen is gone. And
yeah, a little bit more. This is one of the only times where the Spurs are probably more athletic than the team that they're playing against in the playoffs. Because that's their knock. They're not super athletic. That's kind of what did them in against the Thunder last year. But and to correct myself, it was 61-21 for the Spurs because they did drop a couple down the stretch. What's the difference though with the Spurs minus Duncan? I know they have a few additions, like we mentioned Gasol, we mentioned, you know, Dedmon starting now. Like, what's the difference here for the Spurs?
There really is no difference. I want to say it's luck and finding Dedmon and him fitting in. Because Gasol hasn't been, you know, he is who he is. He's a 36-year-old, you know, center. It's just.
Well, he wouldn't accept being benched in Chicago, but he did in San Antonio because that's the way it is. You know, if you want to win, this is the way to do it.
Well, there's a whole lot of difference with Fred Hoiberg telling you and Popovich telling you.
True. So. But yeah, you see a sweep here?
Yeah.
I agree. I just don't see the Grizz getting one. I know they've given them – I know they gave – everyone talks – goes back to the 2011 one where they beat them when it was an 8-1. But obviously, totally different incarnations there. I just don't see it in this one. I mean, the Memphis Grizzlies are at somewhat full health, especially offensively, because Tony Allen is an offensive liability. But – I can see them being much more competitive than they were in last year's playoff series in the first round.
It's just the matchup they can. If we were talking, let's say, Houston, Memphis, yeah. It might be like, well, that might be a tough matchup. Or Utah, Memphis. Oh, that's an interesting, you know.
Yeah, that's a rock fight. Yeah,
that's a chess game right there. But, you know, San Antonio's just like, well, you got the shit luck of the draw of this one.
Let's go ahead and move on here. The next game that'll be up on the Western Conference, I think this one is going to be, if I stare at my schedule long enough here, that's going to be on stalling, starting on ESPN, and that's going to be the Clippers and the Jazz. Now, there was a right down to the wire battle over who was going to get home court, even though it seemed like these two teams were going to be destined to play in the 4-5 matchup for at least the last 2 to 3 weeks. But the Clippers were able to win out at beating the Kings in their final game, where the Kings were kind of on the tank, and got the home court advantage against the Jazz, even though they had the same record. The Clips owned the tiebreaker, I believe. So here we are with the Clippers hosting at Staples to start the series. The Jazz have not made the playoffs since 2012. Obviously different from that version. You know, your stars here for Utah, Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert, a lot of veteranship that they added, like George Hill, Joe Johnson, Boris Diaw, who barely plays, even though he's more of like a locker room guy. Just give us an introduction of what the Utah Jazz are for those that are kind of not as initiated with them in the playoffs.
I don't want to say they're the new Detroit Pistons, because they have stars, but they're not stars.
Mm-hmm. Even Gordon Hayward, who did make the All-Star game this year.
He made the All-Star game, but that was, I think, kind of at the expense of Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, hey, Gobert's going to get it. Oh, Hayward got it? Oh, that's cool, too.
Yeah, and then Gobert got snubbed in favor of DeAndre Jordan. So a little bit of vengeance here?
It's just one of those, like, this team is just, you know, Derek Favors, he's been in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, a lot of issues. I think it was his knee and his shoulder, I believe. He had a very down year.
He really did, and Trey Lyles was supposed to be, you know, could easily come in and take in a spot. He didn't really do it either.
No, they kind of do that small ball stuff with Joe Ingles, you know.
Yeah, that's the one, you know, this is be the one exploiting matchup right there, is you got Blake Griffin at mm-hmm. the four.
And we've seen him against inferior athletic fours, like, you know, remember, I think a couple of years ago, it was, who was that Spurs guy that played now with Detroit? Aaron Baines?
Mm-hmm.
Where he just destroyed him. Now, this was a couple of years ago before Blake had the issues with his knee, and I do think that's taken away from Blake for sure. But, you know, the Clippers
Blake
have...
Blake had a more... He didn't have the explosive year, but I think he had a more well-rounded year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he became more of a... As opposed to just that dominant, I'm going to dunk and, you know, be that energy guy, he sort of, I don't want to say matured a little bit, because his numbers haven't dropped off at all.
Well, the thing is, like, with Doc Rivers, I think he found some success with the Clippers by accident. You know, we've always talked about how the biggest problem that Doc has is that he's so obsessed with playing his starters, which is, you know, Paul Griffin, J.J. Redick, DeAndre Jordan, and then it would be Luke Richard and Mute at the small forward spot. He's so obsessed with running that starting lineup that he never staggers it so that you can have Griffin kind of starting the second quarter or kind of bringing
him
off
nobody,
the bench.
I mean, let's just say you're Doc Rivers, the coach, not the GM. If you look at your bench and you're seeing Jamal Crawford, Austin Rivers, Maurice Spates,
mm-hmm.
Brandon Bass, and Wesley Johnson, Pierce ain't playing. He's just there for his,
well,
you know.
Well, there was a little fool's gold there, because to start the season, their second unit numbers were really, really good, you know, defensively. They were playing, like, out of their mind. They had the best record in the league, like, through the first 2 weeks, but it sort of went back to earth really fast, so.
It kind of went back to earth. It's like, wow, you know, it's Austin Rivers and Wesley Johnson, but, yeah. You know, it's just this. The Clippers team is just frustratingly, like, how can with a team with Jordan, Griffin, and Paul be a four seed and just be terrible at times?
And not only that, in a year where those records after the Warriors and the Spurs were fairly mediocre, like, I mean, I'm just, like, it seems surprising that that Clippers team can't rack up at least 55 wins. If you get 55 wins, that's a three seed, you know?
That's the thing, is we mentioned it before, like, oh, can you believe how good Houston is? And it's like, no, can you believe how bad the West is?
Yeah, it's kind of falling back to earth for some of the other teams that were in front of them. Yeah,
yeah,
with the Thunder, though, that makes sense. We'll talk about them later, but, you know,
it came crashing hard, but it's just like, well, yeah, you lucked into the three seed by being decent. And Clippers just being, you know, because don't forget, you know, we were the fools who, you know, I hang my hat on the you know, the Charlotte thing. But then again, we also said Clippers are one of the three teams that could take the title this year, because on paper, this was their year.
Well, 15 and 16, I still stand by, like, that was a team that could be effective. The only problem is that the team that's in front of them, you know, Golden State, like, that they're such a matchup nightmare. You know, that's why selfishly I don't want to see the Clippers win this series, because I feel like if they have to play Golden State, that's going to be a stoning. That's going to be one of those, like,
one of those,
your time's up.
You think about it on paper, this should be the Clippers are the absolute nightmare matchup for Golden State. This complete physical big team. You just give it to Griffin and Jordan the entire time. Who's going to stop him? Zaza Pachulia? You know, let Curry shoot his
very
threes,
experienced team, a team that can score, a team that can shoot well from the field. You know, things like that can be a problem for Golden State, absolutely. And also, Golden State's not great in the clutch. You know, that's been their biggest bugaboo. We'll get to them in a sec. But
so that being said, it sounds like we're leaning very highly Clippers here.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, let's get back to Utah just to go. Like, where's the – I mean, there's some pretty stark contrast here between the style of play for the Clippers and the Jazz. You know, the Jazz are the slowest-paced team in the league. They don't get to the free-throw line a lot because of the slow pace and the fact that they don't really slash a lot. Not a lot of truly athletic small forwards outside of maybe Alec Burks, but Alec Burks has been kind of an in-and-out type of player too for their lineup. Defensively, incredibly strong, first in the league in points allowed, third in defensive efficiency, ninth in blocks, thanks in large part to Gobert. Do you think this will be a bit of a coming-out party? I mean, this happened with Curry with the Warriors of 2013. You know, I can kind of name-drop a couple others off that I can't think of right now. But is there going to be some sort of coming-out party here for any of these Jazz players, maybe someone like a Gordon Hayward, a Rudy Gobert, a Rodney Hood, somewhere where it's like, oh, wow, this guy can shine.
It should be the coming out party for Hayward, Gordon Hayward.
Gordon Hayward.
I was thinking of Haywood.
Oh, Brendan Haywood, yeah. What a coming out party for him.
I'm like, that's not even close. Because, you know, J.J. Redick's going to be on him, so he should
That's white on white, so that's an even matchup.
He should be able to take that easily and... You know, it's one of those, you know, Joe Johnson and Dia, they've provided so much wisdom to this young roster. And, you know, like I said, the George Hill has been spectacular. And you know, Dante Exum has sort of been the...
Yeah, Exum has kind of become relegated to being like a defensive backup point guard to this point. He hasn't really shown the ability to be a true scorer. He's not a ball distributor. He's like a long-armed, he's like a poor man's George Hill. Like, he's just not good offensively. George Hill is really experienced. He's been through wars with Indiana. But the thing is, he is very off and on in the playoffs. He has some of those moments where he just kind of doesn't show up, you know?
Yep, and, you know, he's got to hold his own against Chris Paul. Cause, like, you know, like I was saying, if you know, he gets into foul trouble, he falters early, you're going to have to put in Exum or...
Yeah, I worry about that bench for the Clippers if it comes down to the bench between Utah and L.A. That's a problem.
It's just, you know, if we're, like the same thing that happened last year. If we're relying on Austin Rivers to be your savior, and, you know, he's a decent, you know, he's, again, not an insult to him, the same thing as Patrick Patterson. He's a definition of, you think of, an average NBA player.
Mm-hmm. If the game slows down, you got to like Utah here. I'll actually go with Utah. I'll say Utah in seven games. I think this one will go seven.
And Clippers in seven because they have the home court.
Okay, you think that little itty bitty, thanks to the Kings, is going to like doing the young? Well, here's the thing: they're 11th in experience, but they were the youngest team in the league to start the season. Just because of the additions of Johnson and Hill and Diaw, that really like boosted their experience. But this is to me, when it comes to their nucleus, these guys are babies. You know,
they're babies, and the same thing. You know, they mirror. Milwaukee in a way where it's just you have young guys who don't know what they're doing, and even Boston, you know, last year. And, you know, we will mention this in our Got Fishing Part 3.
Gone Fishing, we'll figure it out.
You know, this is what you do with a young team. Denver should take notice. Get a veteran.
Well, they tried to get Wade. They even gave him max for Wade.
They tried, and just, you know, well, okay, Mike Miller, do which one. But Mike Miller is just, you know, Mike Miller is not the guy. You need a couple guys in there to.
Well, that's the thing about Hill. Hill leads by example. Remember, I think he was the Western Conference Player of the Week one week. Like, when he plays well, he's really good because he's such a good shooter. You know, and he plays the one, you know, and he's long arm, so he can play pretty good defense on the smaller point guards. So Hill versus Paul, like you were mentioning, good matchup. Keep an eye, like you said, on Blake Griffin at the four spot, especially if the Jazz goes small and they have to run like Ingles or Joe Johnson at the four. Joe Johnson at the four is just funny. It just shows how old he got. That's all.
Because, yeah, Gobert and Jordan should cancel each other out. And...
yeah, or Favors if he kind of gets some pep in his step down the stretch. But we know we both agree, very interesting series. You like the Clips. I like the Utah Jazz, but we both think it'll go the distance. Let's go to one that we don't think will go the distance, and that's the Golden State Warriors and the Portland Trail Blazers. You know what's so ironic about the Portland Trail Blazers is that the thing that was sort of holding them back all year long and keeping them a losing team was that they had too much stability on their roster because they kind of sucked themselves in by using up all their cap space with, you know, keeping their own guys from the previous season, like Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard, who was another one that they had signed up, Alan Crabb. And then guess what was the one thing that invigorated them? It was a roster change on a trade deadline move to get right before the trade deadline to get Yusuf Nurkic. Now, Nurkic has a non-displaced fracture in his tibia.
Something weird like that.
It's basically broke. There's a break, but it's not like completely broken. So,
yeah, it's just a weird freak injury that, again, came karma because he was bad-mouthing Denver.
And he was a beast against the Denver Nuggets. It was a vengeance game, and he destroyed
them. Yeah, it was
him.
Vengeance, and like we mentioned, Portland's fatal flaw throughout the year was, well, you invested so much money on wings. Like, well, you have who's your starting front court? You still have Noah Vonleh sitting there starting.
That's
and
your starting center because Ed Davis is out for the season. Yeah,
yeah, you Ed Davis and Festus is Zeely was your big center signing who couldn't play for the year, and he had to go to Europe to get some cadaver parts for him. Something.
Well, yeah. We know the true strength of the team is their backcourt with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. It's like, what's that State Farm commercial where Paul and Jordan are watching the TV and it says these two, how's it go? Where these two can hit from anywhere or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's Lillard and McCollum. Those are the people that you're literally staring at in the film room, and you're like, God, we got our hands full. Good thing they're playing the Golden State Warriors, the best team in the league.
Can we just say it's three games? they're just gonna go back to the old.
But we might not get another deep dive on the Warriors until we get to the next round, you know, because of the fact that we don't know how much of a challenge there is. So let's just kind of dabble a tad. Kevin Durant is coming back from the injured knee. Now, let me say this. People are looking at those first three games, you know, those last three games of regular season when he came back, you know, one against the Pelicans, another against, I think it was the Utah Jazz. And he had really, really good numbers. But here's the thing. I remember when Kevin Durant had the broken foot in 2015. And guess what he looked like, you know, right before he got shut down again? He looked really, really good again because Kevin Durant is a natural 30-point-per-game scorer. That's just his style. He's going to be great no matter what. But how good is he really? How much is he going to draw contact?
This is why when you asked at the beginning, what are the storylines? And I'm not buying into this Golden State hoopla because, oh, Kevin Durant's back. He scored a double-double. I'm like, anybody? Oh, well, they play the Pelicans. Well, who didn't score a double-double on Golden State against the Pelicans?
Kevin Durant gets 30 points in his sleep, and I'm not even joking. Like, he literally gets he gets 30 points with ease to the point that I don't even notice it. So, I mean, Durant's the best player. Let's agree there. I don't think Curry's the best player on the Golden State Warriors team anymore. I think it's Kevin Durant. You know, but you still got Thompson. You still got Draymond Green, who had another really good defensive season. Andre Iguodala played much better down the stretch. And then you got these ancillary parts with Zsa Pachulia, JaVale McGee. Matt Barnes was picked up late because they needed a fill-in when Durant went down. Sean Livingston is in the last year of his contract. It seems like he's sort of
they got lucky with Matt Barnes having an efficient player who, you know, who's actually decent as opposed to, you know, David West and JaVale McGee and,
yeah,
you know, Patrick McCaw, who, you know, gets way too many minutes because, yes, well, why not? They're up 30. Let's put them in.
Yeah. And then, well, that's the thing, too. They don't really dabble into the death lineup much. They kind of try to mix it up. You see, Steve Kerr kind of does the opposite of what Doc Rivers does. He likes to dabble. Like, he likes to stagger the lineups every now and then. And kind of.
Well, there is no death lineup. Like we sort of mentioned, this team is just like, yeah, they're efficient, but it's just, you know, they're shooters.
Well, the death line, it would be Iguodala at the three, I guess, and Durant at the four.
But it's not really a death lineup. It's just a soft lineup. And we sort of saw that all year. It's just like, yeah, they're hitting threes, but, you know, nobody's really challenging them. And, oh, you're going, oh, way to go against your death lineup against Minnesota.
But how does that make them worse than when they had Barnes at the death lineup? Was it more continuity? Is that what it is?
It's more continuity. And it's just, you know, Durant is not a four. And, you know, how do you take down the death line? Like I mentioned, just be physical against them.
But that's the thing. How much physicality is he willing to take after the injury? Is he going to be a little
ginger?
That's
exactly. You know, the way to take Golden State down is you run circles around Curry. Who,
you
got to
touch him up. I mean, that's what the Cavs did. Every P&R with pick and roll with Curry, they touched him. Like, they had to make sure to get at least a hand on him, you know.
They touched him, or, you know, had double screens where he had to run way too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he's off a step the entire time. And then just, you know, be extra physical against Durant. Go big against him.
Yeah, and you got to be careful with the help defender, because the help defender has to come off the worst offensive player on the court. And that's why the death lineup that they had was so hard, because all five guys could score. You know, you can't help off of anybody. So,
but yeah, Portland, you know.
That's the, you know, the thing is, they points per game, really good. Offense is really good. They shoot a ton of threes because of Lillard and McCollum just being marksmen. Allen Crabb, even though he gets criticized constantly for the, you know, the offer sheet that got matched, which isn't his fault. That's the market's fault. But he's a good 3-point shooter. Mo Harkless, pretty good. Aluminu is an underrated defensive player for them. Evan Turner is just weird. I don't even know how that works. Myers Leonard, he constantly gets booed at Portland because he's been so underwhelming. Defensively, just not a good team. A lot of inexperience. Still a very, very young team. So they got a lot of figuring out. They did play Golden State last year, where Curry missed the first three games, and it went five games, and Portland was very scrappy. And like we said, this is kind of the same Portland team, but like.
But Portland just got extremely lucky, because to be in the luxury tax and almost have missed the playoffs,
mm-hmm,
would have just been a total embarrassment.
Well, it's kind of like Houston. Remember, like, how Houston barely made the playoffs last year, and it's like, dude, how did this happen? You know, which is what created the coaching change that totally. And they also signed Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon. We'll talk about that in a second. That's kind of the sexy matchup. That's kind of saving the best for last, I guess. Even though the TV schedule sort of worked that out, they saved the best for last. But so you see this as a sweep between Portland and Golden State? Oh yeah, I agree with it. Like I'll be fascinated to watch it. You know, I think Lillard has the propensity to go off. He had a 59-point game about a week ago.
Yeah, they'll both go off, but then Curry and Thompson will just match them. Could easily match him point for point, and then you're going to put Allen Crabbe and Evan Turner to stop Durant.
Yeah. Well, they can throw a lot of forwards at him too, like you were mentioning. Like, they have too many wings, absolutely. But kind of like we said with the Hawks, with Washington, like, if you kind of mix up the lineups, it might work. But I mean, Nurkic is big about that. Like, you've got to have a good center.
Well, with no Nurkic, there's just no. He would, you know, he was the one. He was the lifeblood of this Blazers rejuvenation, I think.
Yeah. Oh, down the stretch, I agree. You know, I mean, Lillard's the leader, but for Nurkic, I felt like his ability to actually pound versus what Mason Plumlee and Ed Davis provided, which was very little in the paint, that was a huge, huge plus, and now it's turned into a bit of a neutral factor. Let's go ahead to kind of the mega matchup, the MVP versus MVP, and that's going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder versus the three-seeded Houston Rockets. Just top me off with it. Like, who did you like as the MVP again? Kind of recapping the regular season.
It was Westbrook.
You liked Westbrook because just simply the triple double averaging.
Yes, and you're like, I like LeBron.
I still like LeBron. I do. I mean, there's been a little bit of interest there, a lot of hedging between for some of the voters, like, oh, I like Kawhi, you know, his defensive stuff. And
no, you can't set a 50-year record and then.
I mean, didn't Oscar Robertson introduce him and set, and lead like an MVP chant in Oklahoma City?
Yeah, something like. And
how did James Harden feel about that? He's like, dude, I was like two rebounds away from this, you know.
And even like, you know, all the other players are tweeting like, yeah, he's the MVP. This is, you know, this is what can you say? It was just a complete performance. That was just we had called it, like, this is what he's going to do. There's nobody else on that team was going to store Oladipo. You know what? You probably have the numbers in front of you.
Okay, you want to look? You want to look at Oladipo's numbers?
Yes.
16 points, 4.3 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.2 steals, and he averages just over 2 3-pointers made per game,
which is down from his Orlando numbers, I believe.
His efficiency is a little higher, but his assists are definitely down. I think his points per game is about the same. So
yeah, so he's sort of been a wash. We know Roberson is the defensive guy. They were reduced to starting Sabonis at the four, which he is not, and it was clear he was not.
I was listening to Nate Duncan's podcast and said, and he was very prominent saying that Sabonis should not play a minute of this series. So do you agree?
No, it's not Sabonis' fault. It's just
Billy Donovan. The thing I like about Billy Donovan is that maybe it's because just from the he was from the college grounds of, like, you got to always kind of be a step ahead matchup wise. He is willing to adjust. Like, he's not afraid to kind of let shit fly, you know?
And then they were just gifted Taj Gibson, who hasn't done much, but how much does he really need to do? And McDermott's a body who can shoot.
If you need a small ball five, Gibson's perfect. So if you have to go small against the Rockets, which you will have to do a lot because they fly. You know, Gibson can give you that luxury, and Kanter's a good scoring four. So that's kind of the advantage there. With Westbrook, though, I mean, let me look at the team stats here first with Oklahoma City, because everyone fawns over the Westbrook numbers, which is amazing. 31 points, 10.7 rebounds, 10.3 assists, 1.6 steals. I mean, amazing, amazing. Like, average a triple-double, first time since 1962 by Oscar Robertson. But let's look at the numbers here as a team. Assists, even though Westbrook does all those assists, they're 25th in assists, you know?
Well, it's the non-Westbrook, you know.
Yeah, they get to the free throw line a lot, which is helped a lot by Westbrook, Oladipo, and also Steven Adams, who's pretty good at attacking the rim when he gets a clean pass. Their offense is obviously good. They're second in rebounding, which has never really changed under Oklahoma City. Even under Scotty Brooks, that was the case. They were always a really good rebounding team. It was just a bit of a surprise that without Ibaka, they were able to hold that fort. Defensively, it feels like that second team that you were mentioning with, like, Roberson and Jeremy Grant and Steven Adams, who starts and sometimes he comes off the bench. Defensively, they're pretty strong. That's a pretty strong lineup there. And I think that kind of bridges them into the last 5 minutes, and then Russell just takes over offensively.
Yeah, it's – like I said, there's no other – you know, Oladipo, his numbers are exactly, like you just said, identical to last year.
Good defensive guard, though.
He is the player who we thought he is, and it's just Houston's just going to run down 5 seconds, shoot a three.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they're going to do.
Okay, what's the difference between the Houston Rockets that kind of had the discombobulation after the firing of Kevin McHale? They still made the playoffs and lost to the Warriors in the first round. But what's the difference between that one and this one, coached by Mike D'Antoni, with kind of James Harden running point?
You just – you know, with him, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Lou Williams, we're just going to come down and shoot 40 threes a game.
Which is literally what they do. They're first in three-pointers made by a pretty large margin.
Yeah, that's literally all they're going to do.
But
is just
the
shoot
one
threes.
Good thing for them is that they're still middle of the pack in three-point percentage, which is scary, because if you're taking that many threes and you're making half of them, or you're middle, you're still pretty – you're average at it, that's still scary, because that means you're making a ton of threes.
Yeah, and that's – it's just basically – Oklahoma City's challenge for this series is to be a complete team, to play – to sort of go against the Russell Westbrook do everything, because I think that's how they could beat the Rockets, is by being a let's get all five guys into it. We can't just have Westbrook versus Harden, NBA Jam style.
That's the irony of Russell Westbrook, is that, you know, he's gotten all of this praise for the triple-double, which has been sort of like, it's always connected to the idea of, oh, he's a great point guard, he's a great distributor, he does it all. But here's the thing about Russell Westbrook: if he has to go against that number mongering, in order to be a true point guard and a true distributor, he has to kind of play away from that. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be hard for him. I mean, I think Russell is devious enough that he could figure out a way to do that without getting crazy stats, but still finding ways to win. He did in Oklahoma City with Durant, but different makeup, obviously, for the Oklahoma City Thunder when Durant was there. You know, he had more of a like a Batman Robin thing going on there.
And the problem is just, you know, you can't rely on the bench because Houston has Gordon and Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Who there's no slowdown from the Harden three-point train.
Let me say this, though, for Williams. His regular season stuff, his splits between regular season and postseason are frightening. Like, his regular seasons are really, really good. He always draws fouls with that, you know, herky-jerky shot, you know, flailing, you know, just coming off of the bench and being an off-ball shooter and just being really efficient. In the playoffs, he really sinks because refs don't fall for those flails anymore, and the coaches get smart about isolating him so that he has to take tough shots. So I think for Lou it'll be a problem. For Eric Gordon, this is kind of a coming out party. Like, this is the first time he's on a really good playoff team probably in his career. I know that he went to the playoffs with the Pelicans a couple of years ago, but this is a different story.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Anderson was on those Magic teams that had, you know, Dwight Howard and Hedo Turkoglu. But, I mean, this is kind of different, too, for Ryan Anderson.
We could mention the same thing. This team is just a soft team that's going to shoot threes, but...
Good rebounding team, though. You know, you got Capella there, Montrezl Harrell.
Harrell's been out of the lineup because Nene's been playing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
there's been no minutes for Harrell, and, you know, Sam Decker has been nowhere.
He broke his hand, so we don't know if he'll even be back. I doubt it. You know, we'll see here. And, you know, Kyle Wiltshire, he gets a little bit of play every now and then. But, you know, Capella is really effective because I remember when he went down with the knee injury early in the season, they struggled without him. You know, that's their true five. You know, so if you don't have Capella, if he gets in foul trouble, which he's still, you know, prone to because he's so young, then you got
to – That's their only sort of hope, is you have to get Capella in trouble and then just – give it to Adams.
But don't you fall into the Houston's hands by doing that, because it forces them to play small and then they go super fast? They go in warp speed?
It forces them to go small, but if your bigs are constantly on the bench...
And you got Cantor and Adams inside, or Gibson and Adams inside. Yeah.
Yep.
You got a little bit of advantage.
You got to slow down the pace.
Then, you know, the Thunder like to play fast. You know, that's how Westbrook racked up the numbers. You know, I mean, if you're running, and he's just like a one-man fast break, yeah, you're going to get great numbers if you keep playing fast. You know, people worry about, is Westbrook going to run out of gas? Like, I don't think that's going to be a worry here. That's definitely not a worry for Harden, because it feels like Harden's triple-doubles come kind of easily, whereas with Westbrook it feels like he's just sweating it all the time. You know what I'm saying? That's the one difference. Let's get a prediction here. What do you like here?
Houston probably six.
I like Houston in seven, but I think it'll be a war. I think this one will go all the way. You know, but I mean, should this have any bearing on the MVP voting? I think the votes are going out now, but they're not. I think you reminded me on the regular season recap episode that the award show will not be until June on TNT. So we're not going to know who won the MVP until much later. But do you think this should have had any bearing on it in people's minds?
No, because it's regular season awards, and they have the whole playoff MVP.
Yes.
Separate thing. So, you know, they're be like, why didn't you put both in? And it's just like, well, why does the MVP BV, you know, include playoffs? It's like, well, because a lot of good players get stuck on shitty teams, and, well, we can't discount them because they just missed the playoffs.
Yeah, let me try to throw one thing in there about the idea that, well, Westbrook's going to lose because, you know, Harden's got a little bit better talent and Westbrook's on a bad team. I don't think Westbrook's on a bad team. Like, I think that the Thunder are actually a pretty good team. You know,
they're not a good team.
I think they're good. Like, I think that if I had Adams, Oladipo, and Cantor, and Taj Gibson, I could make a pretty good team even without Westbrook. Or if I were, if I replaced Westbrook with another guy, like, I think that still would be a fairly solid team. They'd basically be the Indiana Pacers.
They're not. We had mentioned how they took a big step back with Durant leaving, and, you know, you traded Ibaka, who was, you know, he gives you what he gives you, and the same, you know, he didn't improve himself in Orlando or Toronto. He's just sort of that, well, he's a known commodity, and you replaced it with Sabonis and some money.
Let me go back to the Ibaka thing. The one thing I'll give Ibaka is that when he's engaged and it's the playoffs, he can be a real pain in the ass. Like, he's...
Oh, yeah, but he's not going to be one of those, you know, you had mentioned who's going to have the coming out party for the playoffs.
Yeah.
The time has passed for him. He's just, we know who he is.
Yeah, that happened
he's
to Pierce. Remember when Pierce had the two, like, really good performances against with the Nets and then with the Wizards. And then when Chris Paul and Blake Griffin went down, everyone's like, oh, this is the opportunity for Pierce. He's going to step up and win. And he didn't. You know, it was like you finally realize, okay, it's over for Pierce. You know, it's going to happen eventually for everybody. I don't see that with Ibaka, though. Like, I think Ibaka still got a little bit of juice left. You know, the other guy I wanted to mention, just kind of like just being off topic, the other guy who I think is a beast in the playoffs that kind of has been buried in all these playoff previews is Bradley Beal. You know, you mentioned Beal, but he's a guy that in the playoffs with the Wizards has been a terror. You know, he's really stepped up in games.
Yep, so...
Let's kind of round this out with just kind of general predictions about the East and the West. Let's just kind of go rapid fire here with conference semis all the way up. So just give me what you have for the East.
Well, we got Celtics and Wizards and Toronto, Cleveland and probably Washington.
Okay.
So... Cleveland. Well, Cleveland. Are you Lily?
Just I could tell you thought long and hard about this.
Well, the Wizards are they have that, you know, mysterious rivalry against Boston.
That's what I'm about to say. Which one was the funeral game? Was that against the Celtics or against the Raptors?
That was against the Celtics.
That was the Celtics where they all wore black.
Yeah, and the Celtics are like, what is this? We don't get it.
Well, it's funny because didn't they just announce a 30 for 30 for Celtics-Lakers? Where it's like, it's such a steaming rivalry, and it's like we're trying to recreate. That was kind of like one of the funnier storylines of the East, that these teams under the Cavaliers were trying to create the tension so that they could like find self-motivation to push. And it was like, dude, you haven't even played each other yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and in the West, it's just Golden State and...
But you like the Clippers playing Golden State.
Yeah, I go with the Clippers, Golden State. Golden State should easily,
and
you know.
Rocket Spurs, what do you like there?
Probably Spurs.
Okay, so you like the Spurs, and you like Golden State to kind of snuff out the Clippers since they own them?
Yeah, and then, you know, we will revise this the next round and all.
And do you have the Cavs and LeBron still?
It has to be Cavs and LeBron because... From just a TV storyline standpoint, nobody else is going to be interesting.
Yeah, but networks don't predict winners. They don't predict winners,
but networks rely on stars, which is why every draft I mention, like, the NBA can't rig this. The NBA is not putting their best player in Oklahoma. They're not putting the best team of all time in a time zone where half the country is already in bed on any given night.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't. That's not good.
That'll be a problem if Golden State plays LA. Like, those games are going to be. It happened with Golden State and Portland. Like, those games are so late that people barely watch them. You know.
Yeah, so it's 11 o'clock game. So nobody's going to. You know, the average person doesn't stay up till 1 a.m. when he has to go to work at 8, or you know, catch the train at 6:50 to go into.
Yeah.
You know,
first world problems.
So it's not like, well, I'll just catch the highlights, but, you know, you don't get the feel of the game. And, you know, you don't build your superstars on such a late time zone.
I like the Wizards beating the Hawks, and I like the, like I said, and the Celtics beating the Bulls. I think the Celtics will go – I think it'll go chalk there, though. I think the Celtics will be the 2 seed in the conference finals. I think the Cavs will beat the Raptors and be the – or the 1 seed. and the Cavaliers will be the two seed. But I do like the Cavaliers overtaking your Celtics in the finals. And then we've got Golden State. I think Golden State will beat Utah. I think the Rockets will beat San Antonio. A little too much offense for San Antonio to handle. And then I like Golden State beating the Rockets in a very close Western Conference final. And then Golden State over Cleveland.
All right, and we can always...
It sounds predictable, but, I mean, the Rockets are a wild card. Like, that...
It sounds predictable, but, you know, let's just...
But then,
you know,
then again, that happened last year. You know, if you told me, oh, yeah, the Cavs played the Warriors again, you say, oh, well, what a ho-hum postseason. But that wasn't the case. Like, the Thunder kind of threw a wrinkle into it because it turned out... Were the Thunder maybe the best team in the league last year? Is there a legit argument?
At the end, yes, definitely.
They were playing,
you know,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with just going with plain vanilla, boring predictions at this point.
Well, especially in the NBA. I mean, that's the story of their
life. You know, let's just pick the boring, you know, this is what do we expect to happen. If anything does it, oh, let's be pleasantly surprised.
Well, do you feel like you're going to be pleasantly surprised by any of these playoff performances?
First round, no.
I mean, definitely first round, because we're going to scratch this out and do another one, you know, in a couple weeks for the conference semi. So we got a whole lot of time to talk about that. Because we've totally exhausted this one. Anything you wanted to throw in there before we kind of wrap up this first round conference preview?
Any predictions of the EuroLeague?
Who was in the EuroLeague Final Four?
Barcelona. The Turkish team that Zizek signed to, that David Blatt is coaching.
So David Blatt is back in the EuroLeague Final Four. I'm going into this completely blind. I did not know any of this.
I think they're in the eight right now.
Is that CSKA Moscow or
CSKA Moscow? I don't.
Or Fenerbahce Ulster? What is that?
I think they had a off year.
Let me see if I can look it up for you, because this is very exciting stuff as we close out this show. I mean, no, EuroLeague Final Four. I don't know. I mean, you're going to have to show. We're going to have to probably go off the air and glance at some of these rosters. But
it's Real Madrid versus Darius Fukudrotis, Panathinaikos, Fenerbahce, Olympiakos, Anadolu Efes, and Baskonia versus CSKA.
Baskonia versus CSKA. CSKA's always good. You know, I mean, for example, I look at their roster right now, and let me see who I can find. I mean,
the reason I mentioned this.
Milos Teodosic, who was really good in the Olympics, you know.
Well, they were the champions last year.
Yeah.
The only reason I mentioned this is Real Madrid is the Real, is the number one seed. And you know who's on Real?
Who's that?
Anthony Randolph.
Oh, from the former LSU one and done.
Former LSU. That's why I sort of wanted to tie it in with a little local. It was a very roundabout way that sort of stalled out. Yeah. But, yes, that's where Anthony Randolph is.
The last
right
time
now.
I heard his name, they the Bulls had to stretch his money in order to sign Pau Gasol. That was the last time I remember Anthony Randolph.
So, Anthony Randolph signing.
And James
everybody.
Augustin, who was the starting center for that awesome Illinois team in 2005.
With Frank Williams.
Frank Williams from Illinois, too. They just got all of Illinois' alumni and said, hey, can you come play for us? No Tomas Sadorowski, unfortunately, thanks to him going with the Wizards. I don't think we're going to see much of him. No Mirotić, you know. I mean, it's kind of gone that way. I mean, we knew this would eventually happen where, you know, EuroLeague and Eurobasket, you're going to have your stars. You're going to have your off seasons where you're going to be able to play some of these guys. But at some point, you want to be at the show. You want to be at the biggest stage of them all. The NBA playoffs is the biggest stage of them all. So, I mean, eventually, you know, I'm not saying EuroLeague is going to just devolve. It's just you're going to lose a lot of the top prospects eventually. So, okay, let's wrap it up here. I'm Adam Murray. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the postseason. We'll see you back very soon.